Welcome to the arena. My name is Greg Sindelar. Today we are here at Texas Policy Summit. We're joined by my good friend, Senator Brian Hughes. Senator Hughes, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man. This is a great conference. It always is. And it's been really nice this year.
Yeah, well, just wait till next year. I think next year will be the best one yet.
You know, you keep saying that, but so far you're right every year. So we'll keep coming.
Well, it's like the entrepreneurial spirit, right? Like you always got to be better and better. Like there's, I have a checklist I keep of all the things we got to improve for next year. Much like I'm sure you do with every session, right? Like we got to improve on that. Senator Hughes, this is an opportunity for our audience to kind of get to learn a little bit about you, a little bit about what it's like serving in the legislature. So let's maybe start at the beginning. Like, tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got into this world.
Man, it's a blessing to be here. Thank you for having me to talk about this. So I grew up in East Texas, the area that I am blessed to represent now. Working folks, first, by God's grace, I was the first one in our family to get a bachelor's degree. And did that. My mom had actually, when I was in junior high school, had gone back to school herself and got a nurse's training, a real blessing for our family. And so I'm blessed to have a family that loved me and God provided for us. We had everything we needed and good public school education. Don't blame them for how I turned out. I had a good public school education and then got to go to college after that, then on to law school. And I've always been a nerd, always been interested in government and history and politics and things like that. And, you know, those uniquely American things like free speech and the right to vote and to participate and free exercise. And so that made me interested in these things. So I thought maybe at someday I'd be involved at some level. Didn't really know what that would look like. So it's always been interesting to me. And then the Lord just opened up the opportunity and made it clear it was time for us to do it. So I ran as a pretty young man, ran for the Texas House in a race I was not supposed to win against an incumbent Democrat. This is not a partisan talk. He was a nice guy, but nice guy, no buts. Did not vote as conservative as the district was, we didn't think. And this is back when East Texas was going through, we might say what the Rio Grande Valley is going through now.
Yeah,
as far
that's
as
a
the,
good parallel, yeah.
You know, conservative Democrats identify with the Democratic Party and figuring out that party had left us. And so starting to turn Republican. So anyway, elected to the House and sort of an upset, and I'm not bragging, I'm just thankful that worked out. And so I've been involved since then. The specific issue that got us involved really was the pro-life issue.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, Texas was doing some pro-life work, and I worked as a volunteer. That also got me involved in some Republican Party politics, going to the convention, going to the precinct convention, and then going to the state convention and participating in formulating that policy, just one vote, just one person in that process. So that's what kind of got us involved, but thankful to get to do this.
Yeah, and so obviously you have your House time, your Senate time. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between the chambers and, you know, maybe the pros and cons of each?
You know, in the Texas House, you represent about 200,000 people. Some of the largest House districts in the country. Most state reps have many fewer constituents than that. In the Texas Senate, we have about 1 million people. So our districts are obviously bigger than U.S. congressional districts.
Mm-hmm.
The only state that's close to our size of districts is California. And their senators have about 1 million people. Of course, they're losing people. We're gaining people. So we're gonna be further ahead before long. But the House and Senate are really unique. And it's a blessing to get to do this. With 150 members in the House, the dynamic is different than 31 in the Senate. I would say the floor procedure is very different.
Mm-hmm.
The floor of the House, it's a roar. It's there's always something going on.
Yeah.
There's a debate happening, but there's a discussion here. Maybe almost a little friendly shoving match over here. And you look around and you think, why are they talking? I wonder what they're working on. Hey, what's happening over here? There's 150 people who are very good people persons, and they're working on each other, trying to get their bills moving and
interruption
to their districts. And so it's fun to watch. It's dynamic. It's vibrant. In the Texas Senate, the floor procedure is very quiet, very staid. And so that takes some getting used to.
Yeah.
But I will say in the Texas Senate, having more constituents and being one of 31, you are able to have more of an influence. And one thing I'll say, you know, after we pass a bill in the House and the Senate, we delegate to the agency to develop rules to implement this law. Bills can't be so specific on every detail. The agency has to do that. Sometimes the agency doesn't do the bill right or doesn't do it at all or does it backwards. And so we have to kind of bird dog them. I've noticed in the Texas Senate, you're in a better position to really stay on them and make sure we get it done. The agency folks are not bad people. They're trying to do their jobs, but stuff gets lost in translation. So I would say the House and Senate are both such an honor to get to serve in, and I'm blessed to have done that. I do feel like in the Senate, I'm for my whatever little gifts I have, I'm able to be more effective and get more done, I think, in the Senate.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, and I want to get back into maybe some of the specific legislation and policies that, you've put forth. But, you know, I think, you know, I've known you for a long time. I've been at TPF 17 years. I've known you 17 years. And I've always, we've always got had a great relationship and really appreciative of everything you've done. But you, not too long ago, at least not too long ago for you, got married. So tell us a little bit about how married life is going and maybe how that's changed things. You got to think about more than just yourself now.
That's exactly right, man. So got married at the end of 22 and to a wonderful lady who I met about a year before. Actually, I met her through this process after the heartbeat bill passed in 2021. And, you know, that was the first pro-life law in 50 years that the federal courts allowed to stand. It was drafted in a way that they kind of had to allow it to stand, which they didn't love, but they had to. And so a lot of smart people worked on that. I'm just one of the part of the process. But after that bill passed, I got a lot more interviews. I'm obviously not made for TV, but I was on TV a whole lot more after that. And on this one interview, there was this beautiful lady in Dallas being interviewed about the heartbeat bill. And we were in different places on the same program. And she liked the bill. That was a good sign. And looked her up, and she was a neat Christian conservative involved in this stuff. And so we got connected after that. She invited me to come to Dallas to speak at an event, a Republican women's event in Dallas, and began to spend time together. And the Lord just worked everything out. And so remarkably, she agreed to marry me. And so it's really something. She loves the Lord. She studies her Bible. She's beautiful. She's smart. Yeah, she is really something. So it has been a big adjustment for me, because you're right. My first years in office, I was single, and so it did mean I was freed up to basically spend all my waking hours on this
stuff. Office all the time. Yeah,
if I wanted to, going to events, that sort of thing, going by myself. It's wonderful now. You know, marriage is God's design. Everybody doesn't get married, but it's obviously ideal, and that's I'm so thankful that I get to be married to her. And so she enjoys these things. She loves our country. It's important to her. She likes politics. She's not just eat up with it, but she likes it. She's interested. And so what a wonderful partner. And so I'm so much better at everything now. I'm learning how to be a husband. That's been an adjustment being a single guy for so long, but it's been wonderful. My wife Layla was born in Turkey to American parents.
Interesting.
Yeah, grew up overseas, but roots in Alabama. And so after elementary school, family came back to the States. She was in Alabama, then went to school there. I'm a Roll Tide man now. She went to Alabama.
Well,
and then,
that's an Aggie. I don't know.
Okay, I know.
All right.
I know, but sorry. And then she went to the Northeast for business school and then came to Dallas. And we met not long after that. So it's been a great blessing. And hard to believe it's been almost a year and a half. But I highly recommend marriage. As you well know, you're ahead of me on that.
Highly recommend it. It makes you better at everything that you do. And I can tell that your legal training, your time in the House, and your work on persuasion really helped you ensuring that you're successful in that proposal, which, you know, that we all wonder, like, how did this work? But here we are.
Everybody wonders. When you look at a picture of my wife and me, the message you get is, man, God must really love him. Wow, what is she doing with him? I'm very thankful. She is really something.
Yeah. I feel that way too. Now, it's a little more hurtful when someone tells you that, but
it is.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's go back also a little bit to your district. You know, obviously you mentioned earlier you are from that area. You know, East Texas, I think one of the most beautiful areas of Texas. You know, can you tell me, you know, a little bit about the things that you find are really important to the constituents in your district, and maybe a little of the things that you love most about your district that when people are traveling around Texas, they should go check out.
Thanks, Greg. It really is a special place. We're all blessed to be in Texas, and you know this. This has been a theme of this conference. It always is. You know, Texans like to brag, and we need to be humble and be thankful for how God's blessed us. Yeah. But you know this is a special place,
yeah,
man.
I call it appropriate bravado.
Man, I'm going to use that when you're not around.
Maybe when you are. Use it. Yeah, okay. Even when I am around, use it. Yeah.
So Northeast Texas, I represent about 1 million people. We border Oklahoma, Arkansas, and mm-hmm. Louisiana. Beautiful rolling hills, yep. Trees, lots of water, a lot of history. Sam Houston first came to Texas in what is now Red River County in Senate District 1, Northeast Texas, that I get to represent. The only international border marker in the continental United States is located just outside Carthage on the Texas-Louisiana line. There's a border marker that was placed there in 1842. And so if you go and look on your phone and look where it is, it's right on the state line. They were doing pretty good surveying back in the 1840s.
Yeah,
it's impressive.
Right.
And on the Louisiana side of this marker, this granite marker, it says U.S. And on the Texas side, it says RT for Republic of Texas.
Oh, man.
So
Love that.
Isn't that amazing? They were all across the border. This is the only one left. And the state is taking steps to protect that, make sure that gets preserved as our history. So, a special place, lots of history there. Sam Houston came through there a number of times. We have places commemorated where he spoke and where he did important things. And so a lot of history. We have a lot of growth, a lot of new people. The dirt is moving. Things are getting built. Highways are going up. It's an exciting place. Mm-hmm. Agriculture is still a big deal for us. A lot of timber, a lot of food crops, of course. Medical is a tremendous sector. If you look at our region, not just in Texas, but in the United States, we're a major medical hub. And so a lot of good stuff's happening there, a lot of exciting things. You know, people are concerned about inflation.
Yeah.
You know this, I'm not a wealthy guy, and working folks, maybe folks who are struggling, I don't know how they're buying groceries.
Yeah.
The way things are, we're all dealing with this. And so they're concerned about that. Folks are encouraged about the property tax relief.
Yep.
It was a long time coming. Finally got delivered, and there's more of that to come. And obviously, everybody is worried about the border. In Texas, we've known about this for a long time, but it's nationwide. Now, I've got a beautiful, diverse district. When I'm in Texarkana talking about the border, I've got to clarify which one. I'm talking about the U.S.-Mexico border.
Not the Arkansas one?
There you go. But we're watching that one. But the U.S.-Mexico border is obviously the one we are so concerned about. And folks are glad Texas is stepping up. Many people I hear from who are not even political say, hey, I love what the governor's doing, love what you guys are doing. And that's encouraging because we work for them. And so people are concerned about that, but they're encouraged that something's getting done.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of things getting done, there's a couple of big pieces of legislation you were very involved in that I want to talk about. But one you already mentioned is the heartbeat bill. And, you know, you said that pro-life stuff was what actually got you involved in this world and being in the arena, if you will. And so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how that came to be and the components of that, because, you know, legally it was I think, brilliant the way you guys put that together. And so I'd love for you to just take a minute to lay that out for folks.
Man, thank you so much. This is obviously before Roe versus Wade was overturned. And so Texas for about 20 years had been passing pro-life laws, pushing as far as we could, protecting that little unborn baby while we love and support and respect the mom. Mm. You know, those two lives, both are important. We always want to focus on both. And so a number of states had passed heartbeat laws, and Texas had not. Many had passed laws that were on the way to being overturned by the Supreme Court. But a lot of things came together. In 2021, we had new Trump appointees to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it looked to us like the time was right to send a case there.
Yep.
You don't want to pass a strong pro-life law and have it reversed and make the law worse than it was before, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to be tactical about it. And so protecting a little life when there's a heartbeat, man, that heartbeat, that universal sign of life, your earliest memories of your mother's heartbeat, your loved one in the hospital with the heart monitor, that's life, man. Yep. There's life there. And people get that. They get the science. And it's a heart thing in more ways than one. So in the past, we passed pro-life laws. They would be challenged. And you know this, I'm getting into minutiae, but if the legislature passes a law you don't like, you can't just go to court and sue the law. you've got to sue the government official in charge of enforcing the law.
Yep.
So you sue the governor, you sue the district attorney. Roe versus Wade, it was a suit against Henry Wade, the Dallas County district attorney, so that he couldn't enforce Texas abortion laws back in the 1970s. So you sue the government official, then you get an injunction against the law, and the law is blocked while we go through the court. So the law doesn't get to take effect. We wanted to pass a pro-life law that would take effect immediately. We worked with a brilliant lawyer named Jonathan Mitchell and some great, smart, you know Jonathan well, smart folks in the legislature worked with us. And so we passed a law. The heartbeat law is enforced by private civil enforcement, by private citizens, not by the government. So under the heartbeat law, if a doc takes the life of a little unborn baby, if there's a heartbeat present, or if the doc doesn't check for the heartbeat, the doctor is subject to a civil lawsuit by anyone in Texas who's aware of this. Anybody can sue that doc. Now, the government doesn't come after the doc. There's no criminal penalty. He doesn't lose his license, but anyone can sue the doc for $10,000 damages or more. And so some folks said, why did you do that? You're not going to give him a fine. You're not going to cost him your license. Well, if we had put any government role in there at all, if we'd made it a civil, if we'd made it a penalty that the DA enforces or the medical board enforces, if we had done that, then the left would have sued the medical board, sued the district attorney to block the law from ever taking place. But since we used private civil enforcement, there was no one for them to sue to block the law.
Yeah.
So the law took effect. And obviously, it's going to make a doctor think twice before he takes the life of a little unborn baby without checking for a heartbeat if he knows that anyone can sue him for that. And the law had the intended effect. Doctors stopped doing abortions on little babies that had heartbeats. I want to make sure one thing is clear. There is no lawsuit. There is no penalty. There is no recourse against the mom. We love those moms. There are two victims in abortion situations. There's a little unborn baby and the mom who's often been lied to about her options. She's scared. So we want to love and support both of them. But the doctor performing that abortion, that doctor is held accountable. And so that was the unique thing about the law. So we passed the law in 2001 and got through the House, got through the Senate. Representative Shelby Slauson, then a freshman, carried the bill.
Yep.
Representative Briscoe Cain was really the early heartbeat bill guy in Texas. He'd filed a heartbeat bill the session before.
Yep.
He was integral to this. So many people were. The pro-life groups came together behind this. Lieutenant Governor Patrick got behind this idea early. And so as we were criticized during the process for this unique enforcement mechanism, this private civil enforcement, he backed us up. Our friends backed us up. And by God's grace, it got done. Governor Abbott was obviously proud to sign the law, and it took effect. So September rolled around when the laws take effect. We were bracing ourselves for the Supreme Court ruling. I was in a hotel here in Austin watching what was going to happen, and the Supreme Court allowed the law to take effect. First time that's happened really since Roe versus Wade. And so in Texas, we did a major blow against taking the lives of little unborn babies long before the Supreme Court touched Roe versus Wade. And, you know, when we did that, the heartbeat bill passed, the sky didn't fall, the Capitol didn't burn down. We believe now that when Texas passed that heartbeat law and it took effect and abortion clinics closed, we believe that may have helped the Supreme Court when they took up the case to overturn Roe to realize, hey, we can do this. Now, we don't know that. We didn't talk to them, obviously. We don't do that. I hope the other side doesn't. We don't do that. But it was a big victory, and I want to stress one more thing, and I know we're not a deep policy discussion today.
Yeah.
The heartbeat law, we made very clear that if the life of the mother is in jeopardy, if her health is at risk, she is allowed to move forward if she needs to. That was not changed. You know, many people today have started this narrative.
A lot of confusion on that.
There's a lot of confusion. Yeah. A handful of docs and hospitals are either ignoring the law, not reading the law. Some are putting women's lives in danger. And Texas law says not to do that. So we want to be very clear about that.
Well, I'm glad you cleared up some of that confusion. Hopefully people understand that. The other part of this, right, is, you know, if we want Texas to be the best place to have and raise a family, you know, what are the things that we can do as a state to, one, recognize the importance of the nuclear family as the building block of any prosperous and free society?
Yes.
But also, what are we doing to help these families? Sometimes these families in crisis, right? And these young mothers in crisis. And, you know, so have you given any thought to maybe some of the other things that the legislature could be looking at to further down that road?
Greg, I'm so glad you brought that up. Many times our friends on the left will say, oh, you're not pro-life, you're just pro-birth, because you don't care about them after they come along. And so Texas has taken that very seriously. As you know, we started several years ago, the first state to take federal family planning money and state money and use that to give real help to those moms who are facing unplanned pregnancies. The Alternatives to Abortion program we started about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Other states have replicated that or tried to, and we're glad that we want them to. And so real tangible help for those moms who are facing an unplanned pregnancy. And as you say, many of these moms are in financial difficulties. They don't have support. And so real tangible help during the pregnancy, prenatal care, once the baby comes along, baby formula, diapers, rent assistance, baby clothes, car seats, and getting them in touch with folks who can help them with things like parenting classes and things that we all need. And sometimes our parents were there to provide that for us, sometimes they weren't. So yes, we've increased that program over and over again every session. And when we passed the heartbeat law, we added $100 million to that program to make sure those moms are protected, make sure they have what they need, and putting them in touch with people who can help and just give them real tangible help. Because, you know, again, we can save the life of the unborn child while we love and support and respect those moms. And that's our goal. That message gets filtered out by the traditional media. They don't want to talk about that. We always try to lead with that because it's so important, because we love them. These moms many times have been lied to about their options. They're scared. They don't know what's ahead of them or what they're facing. We want them to know they have help and they have support.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I'm on the advisory board for the John Paul II Life Center here in Austin, and that's the number one thing I've learned, is that if you can work with these women, these families, and search the support in the right way, that they will choose life, right? Because they're going through something very traumatic, right? And they need to be enveloped and loved in that moment.
Amen.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I don't want to forget, I want to be respectful of your time, but a couple other things I want to get to. One, obviously, you were one of the architects of HB 20, the social media viewpoint discrimination bill. Had some big moments in the Supreme Court recently. I would love for you to talk a little bit about that and what's going on and where you see, hopefully, that heading.
No, thanks. It's encouraging. We worked on this issue since 2019 because we were frustrated, like I bet everybody watching this, when you get blocked, you get punished by social media, and you don't really know why.
Yeah.
And they say, well, you violated our terms of service or our community standards. But they won't tell you what that means. They won't tell you what you did wrong. And there's nothing you can do. There's no place to go. There's no appeal process. There's no meaningful appeal process. And so we passed this law in 2021 that says these major social media providers, Facebook, YouTube, which is Google, Twitter, now X, those places, they are common carriers. That's the new town square. That's where people go to hash it out. That's where we go to have our debates and share our ideas. And what do I mean by common carriers? It's an old concept in American law, and you get it. Your cell phone provider, they are a common carrier. That means they can't cut you off because they don't like your politics. Aren't you glad?
yeah, that's right.
And the same with you, and the folks that provide your electricity at home, they don't get to deny you service because of your religion or your lack of religion. They can't do that because they are common carriers. They have such a big market share. They're providing a service available to everyone. They're the only game in town.
Yep.
And so many times they also have a monopoly or have power given to them by the government. And that's exactly the case with social media. Federal law protects them. It allows social media providers to act as editors, to change the message, but then not be held accountable like anybody else would. So for those reasons, these companies are common carriers. So our law in Texas says you're a common carrier. And if you punish someone based on their viewpoint, their First Amendment views, their views on religion or health care or politics, whatever it might be, if you do that, you're going to be held accountable. The law says social media companies have to publish for us a list of what the rules are, so we'll know. Just tell us what the rules are, because nobody will tell you. And they've got to give us an appeal process. And if they violate your rights, you can sue them in Texas state court. And if you win, the judge orders them to put you back online, and the judge makes big tech pay your attorney's fees. They obviously don't like that. And so they sued us to block that law. And one thing I want to make clear, people don't miss, we're talking about viewpoint discrimination. We're talking about your views on politics, on religion, whatever the issue is. If we are talking about content that is lewd, lascivious, excessively violent, that material has got to be dealt with. Federal law requires that, and our Texas law requires that. So big tech always says this will be horrible, evil things will be posted online. If we're talking about lewd, lascivious, excessively violent, pornography, of course that's blocked. It's got to be blocked.
Yeah.
Under our law, they're required to deal with illegal content, which they're not doing a good job of today, like protecting children. So these bases are covered. They sued us. And, of course, they sued us to block the law before it was implemented. And we've been on hold for a couple of years, and now in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. I went to the Supreme Court for the arguments. I didn't argue the case. Our Attorney General Paxton was there, of course, in support. Our new Solicitor General, a very sharp law professor, handled the arguments very well. And he was there, did a great job. Big Tech hired one of the conservative luminary lawyers, Paul Clement, who's normally on our side.
Yeah, that's right.
But he's working for Big Tech on this one, and he's a great guy, brilliant lawyer. Anyway, the arguments went well. This was not a traditional Republican versus Democrat issue. If you look at the questions the justices were asking, the Republican justices, some liked the bill, some didn't. Same with the Democratic justices. I don't know where it's going to go, but what I think is going to happen, since Big Tech sued us and blocked the law before it could take effect, and before there's really been, so now before there's even been much of a trial, we're in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. I think the U.S. Supreme Court will send it back to the trial court, let the law take effect, and let us have a trial. Because those big tech guys do not want us to go through the discovery process, right?
Yep, in a lawsuit, right. That's what they're trying to avoid.
They are. They send you written questions. We send them written questions. We look at their documents. They do not want us to peer into the keyhole and see what they've been doing, to see who they've been blocking and why. We believe it's much worse than we realize. They've obviously got something to hide. So let's go back and have that discovery process. And once we open up what they've been doing, once the Supreme Court sees it, once the people of America see it, I believe we're going to win. I believe we're going to win big. And it's going to be a blow for free speech. And again, it's not just about muffling conservative voices.
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly what they're doing. But we don't want them to muzzle left or right. We want to have a free, robust speech. Some people say, oh, what about misinformation? What about bad information? You know, Americans are pretty smart.
Yeah.
We can handle it. In America, we believe in free speech. Let's have a debate.
Yeah. You civil say what, discourse. Civil, it's so important.
Civil
yeah.
discourse, man. See what she thinks and you think and I think. And we'll hash it out. And the marketplace of ideas will get us to the right place. But now, we got these big tech oligarchs that are blocking big parts of the argument. We can't have that in America. So we're excited about where this is going to go.
Excellent. All right. So very last question for you. What are some of the things that you're looking forward to next session that are kind of top of mind for you?
ESG, right? ESG. We have these we have BlackRock, we have State Street, these giant Wall Street firms, and they're taking your money and using it against you. They've got people's 401ks. They used to have a lot of Texas funds. They've got state pension funds. Trillions of dollars they manage. So they take their investors' money and they go buy shares in all these companies. And since BlackRock owns the shares, they get to vote those shares at the annual meeting. So they go to the CEO before the meeting and they say, hey, you got a nice company here. Do you like your job as CEO? Do you like your board? I've got millions of shares. I'm going to vote.
I'm going to vote you out.
I'm going to vote you out if you don't do 1, 2, and 3. And this happens before the meeting. We don't even see this because the CEOs have to comply for fear of Al Capone burning their store down, right? That's where we are. Texas was the first state to push back against this with Senate Bill 13, Senator Birdwell's bill that says if you boycott oil and gas, Texas boycotts you. That was the first state. Other states have followed. You know, the State Affairs Committee, with Lieutenant Governor Patrick's support, had a hearing in Marshall. Yeah. We wanted those BlackRock guys to come to America. We brought them to Texas. We subpoenaed them and made them bring their documents to peer into the keyhole, see what they've been doing. They didn't like that too much. And so we're going to continue that. You saw, my goodness, what Chairman Kinsey and the State Board of Education has just done, taking that money away. So that's going to be a big fight. We're winning. We are winning this fight. Their behavior is changing a little bit, a little bit. So we're winning, and other red states are with us. And again, we're not trying to get them to vote those shares in a conservative way. We're saying to them, you maximize profits for the people of Texas, for those retirees.
Be
for
good
those
fiduciaries.
That's right. You do your job and leave the politics to the voters.
Awesome. Well, Chairman Hughes, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your service to our great state. And congratulations again on 18 months, successful marriage. Hopefully, you know, we're back doing this again in 18 years, talking about how it's going. So thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for being part of our event here today. Really, really appreciate everything you're doing.
Thankful for you, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for joining us here on the arena. We'll be back with our next episode very soon.